Our reading today is called Commitment by Dorothy Day. People say, what is the sense of our small effort? They cannot see that we may lay one brick at a time and take one step at a time. A pebble cast into a pond causes ripples that spread in all directions. Each one of our thoughts, words, and deeds is like that. No one has the right to sit down and feel helpless. There's too much work to do. I found a faith in a church that accepted me just as I am. I'm not broken. I'm not damaged. And I have a lot to offer this world. I'm good enough, for that's how God made me. This was the answer Maria gave me when I asked her why she was a Unitarian Universalist. Maria is Filipino, and she lives on Negros Island in the Philippines. Her congregation in Binay Binay is very poor. They're mostly sugarcane workers, and Maria has only an eighth grade education. In these ways, she's not like most Unitarian Universalists in the States. In fact, she's quite the opposite. Nationally, the demographics in our pews tell a different story, a story of mostly a white middle-class person on average to have 17 years of higher education. Now, our congregation here at the Fox Valley has a few people of color, and I believe we might hold a more diverse economic and educational representation than most metropolitan Unitarian Universalist churches. And yet, if we compare ourselves to our congregation in Binay Binay, we're like night and day. So how did this liberal faith reach into the hearts of people in both the United States and the Philippines? What do we share? And what's different? Today we're going to look at how and if Unitarian Universalism is a message that can reach out to everyone, no matter their race, no matter their class, no matter their education. And if this is a message for everyone, how can we bring more diversity into our own predominantly white congregation here in the Fox Valley? As many of you know, in April of this year, I was lucky enough to travel to the Philippines with a group of Unitarian Universalists from across the country. Some of us were from congregations already partnered with churches in the Philippines, and others were just going along to learn about more. Our congregation was very lucky to have three people who could go. Lee Boki Burke and myself, along with Nadine Van Lieshout, and I worked with members of our church partnership committee, and we gathered together gifts and money and messages for us to carry to our partnership church in Binay Binay. When we arrived in the Philippines, we were greeted by Reverend Rebecca Quimada. She's the daughter of Toribio Quimada, the minister who is credited with bringing Unitarian Universalism to the Philippines. She's one of those people who just radiates with love when you meet her. Love for her country, love for her fellow Filipinos, and a love of this shared faith that we have. Rebecca actually went to seminary at Meadville Lombard in Chicago, and she could have stayed here and led a vibrant church and made a lot more money. Yet she couldn't resist the pull of her heart. She felt called to go back to the Philippines. And although she knew she'd be sacrificing a lot, she knew she was called to continue the work of her father. During the 1930s, Rebecca's father, Toribio, was raised Catholic, but he found himself attracted to the Protestant church. He struggled with the message of brokenness that the Catholic Church of the Philippines and the government seemed to reinforce. He wanted to spread a different message, one of acceptance and hope. By chance, he comes across some information from a Universalist church, and he found that his own beliefs were in line with theirs. And so he wrote to this church, and he asked if they might send him some money so he could help spread the word of acceptance and love in the Philippines. So they sent him money. And Toribio spent years going into remote villages, spreading the word of universal salvation and that we are all loved. He worked tirelessly, training ministers and raising money. In the 1950s, the message of universal salvation resonated on Negros Island in the Philippines, just as it did in our own country back in the 1800s. The message that God loved everyone and did not make distinctions resonated with Kimada and the villagers that he sought to serve. The congregations he was working with began to grow and thrive. These were the poorest of the poor, and yet this message resonated with them. And this is a pretty radical message in the Philippines, even still today. The Catholic faith was and is such a fabric of their lives that many rituals are so common and a part of everyday life that nobody questions them, nobody challenges them. One woman told me that when it's all you've ever known, you don't even realize that you can think differently. Yet even in a culture that has a central faith, there were still those who had questions and doubts. They struggled not just with the church, but also with their government. These were folks that were interested in Toribio's message. And even after the merger of Unitarians and Universalist churches in 1961, he continued to receive money from the UUA, and he registered the UU Church of the Philippines with the Philippine government and launched 25 churches. He recruited educated men when he could find them and lay ministers as well. One village minister that I met, he had been recruited by Toribio over 31 years ago, and he was still serving that congregation. And he said when Toribio challenged him to lead the church, he balked. "I don't know enough," he cried. He didn't feel qualified. But Toribio saw in him a man with a true heart, filled with compassion. So he asked him, "But if not you, then who?" In a country deeply steeped in tradition, there were so few people brave enough to share this new way of seeing God in their place in the world. "If not you, then who?" This young man bravely accepted this challenge, and 31 years later, he still finds himself serving this community with love and compassion to a community that's grown and benefited from our liberal theology. As congregations began to grow, Toribio began working closely with them for changes in land reform and better treatment for the workers. Soon, he was looked upon by the government and wealthy landowners as a threat. In June of 1988, his home was set on fire. His children, including Rebecca, all escaped. Toribio was not so lucky. He was found shot and killed. Years later, despite investigations by his family, no one has ever been charged with his murder. Rebecca suggests that the same conditions that led to her father's death prevent that case from proceeding to a close. "I worked hard to seek justice for the horrible death of my father. It's sad to say that when a poor person is fighting for justice, then justice is usually denied." Rebecca took us to the gravesite of her father, and tears welled up in her eyes. "I'm here because this faith matters to the life of my father and to the life of the people here in the Philippines. If not her, then who?" Rebecca knows that Filipino Unitarian Universalists speak about the joy and energy that they feel due to having the power of congregational polity and the freedom of belief. It's central to her heart to keep working for a faith that believes that all are loved and accepted. On our trip, we also traveled with Reverend Nihal Atanayka, who is the Director of Faith in Action for the Unitarian Universalist Church of the Philippines. Along with Rebecca, they take us to visit 11 of the now 24 churches. Some of you might have met Nihal when he was here in 2008, and he's going to be back again this fall. He's a compassionate and quiet man from Sri Lanka who married a woman from the Philippines. And Nihal spends his days traveling to the remote congregations. His trips are not easy. They take hours on rutted and muddy roads. Nadine, Lee, and I were really looking forward to the day that we were going to go visit with our congregation in Binay-Binay. But due to the heavy rains and trucks going in and out harvesting the sugarcane, we were warned that the roads might become impassable. Our group was using two large vans to travel around the island, and that day, after jostling and jolting our way in the van, the driver finally stopped. He said we could go no further. Well, thank goodness for Nihal. He travels these roads regularly. He knew exactly who to call. Soon, five for-hire motorcycles, or hobble-hobbles, pulled up. He instructed the drivers where to take us, and we each climbed on the back, hanging on to our drivers, loaded down with our bags. Nadine's driver took off, Lee's driver took off, and I'm thinking, this is going to be interesting. We headed slowly through this enormous puddle that had stopped the van, and soon we continued on through ruts and mud and more water for the next half hour. I could only hang on and howl with laughter as we went through things I thought we'd never get through. We arrived to find about 50 people pouring out of a small cinder block church to greet us. A hand-painted sign above the door proclaimed, "The Unitarian Universalist Church of B'nai B'nai." Our group was gathered up among smiles and hugs and handshakes, and they brought us inside to the simple church. Sitting on handmade wooden benches, I looked around. A lace tablecloth was over a table and acted as a centerpiece at the front of the church. It was graced with a vase of flowers, and a chalice sat firmly in the middle. Just as we light our chalice here each service, so does that congregation. I wondered, how many Sunday mornings found us doing the same action with the same intention? I was impressed with the strong presence of women leaders in all of the churches we visited. In B'nai B'nai, the leader of the women's group welcomed us, and Rebecca translated when necessary. She introduced their shy and quiet minister, the president of their board, their youth leaders, and RE teachers. And then a village dog wandered into the church and plopped himself down right in the middle of the floor. And nobody seemed to mind, and the dog looked like he'd been there many times. The RE children were called forward to sing a song for us, and then they recited the eight principles. Yes, there's eight principles in the Philippines. The UU Church of the Philippines have adopted a principle that states, there is a God. The more I talked with people about this principle, the more I began to see a similarity to the understanding of God in the way that AA understands God. People were invited to accept God in their own definition. This tiny little church looks so different than our building here in Appleton. Our walls are wide and smooth and white. Our floors are softly carpeted. Our chairs are wide and padded. Well, maybe not the red ones. Those aren't so good. But as I looked around, I saw that we had a lot of similarities, too. We shared a similar table at the forefront of our worship space. We lit a chalice and recited words to begin our time together. We sang Spirit of Life together. We shared the same sweet, smiling laughter of our children. We shared a commitment to love one another and build a better world through our social justice work. We shared a commitment to religious education that helped to provide roots and wings for our children to find their own understanding of faith. This liberal faith that encourages exploration and reason alongside acceptance of the mystery resonated with these people, just like it does here. It made sense to folks who do not have more than an eighth grade education, who work hard in the fields with their hands. How can this be? Our history and our demographics in the States tell us that this is impossible. In the States, we struggle with having people of color, people of lower socioeconomic levels enter our doors en masse. Historically, in the U.S., Unitarianism has attracted mostly wealthy and educated people. In the development of our faith in 1850s Boston, Unitarians represented about half of the corporate directors, a third of those with upper-ranged assessed property values, and a third of those who held city or national or state offices. Unitarians were those who questioned the reasoning behind Christianity and often held to more humanist or transcendental ideas. Universalists, on the other hand, were more interested in a message that all were children of God and that all were accepted and loved. At that time, a good moral Unitarian wasn't so sure about sharing space with an obvious sinner. Unitarian churches are rarely rural, and in fact purposely placed in liberal college towns or in neighborhoods where they felt they had the best opportunity to attract members like themselves. As you know, by 1961, these congregations merged. And between the two ways of looking at the world, they came to find a way to be Unitarian Universalists. Even though our brothers and sisters in the Philippines tend to lean more towards a universalist understanding of faith, many also claimed Unitarianism. Some shared with me that although they believed in God as they understood God, they couldn't make sense of the idea of a Trinitarian God. Difficult and bold words to share in a strong Catholic country. So I returned and began to ponder why this message of Unitarian Universalism works in the Philippines, drawing in the poor and the less educated, when we can't seem to do the same here in our own country. After returning, I attended the Central Midwest District's Minister's Retreat. Keynote speaker Mark Morrison Reed asked the very same question. He's an African-American UU preacher, writer, and professor. He challenged us. He said, "We say that we're welcoming and that we support and believe in diversity, but our membership says otherwise. Why is this?" He asked us to listen to how we talk about faith, to look at who we turn to for our sources of inspiration and devotion. Outside of Martin Luther King Jr. Day, we rarely hear readings from African Americans or other people of color. He said most folks of color would probably walk in our doors and not see themselves in our music, readings, or sermons. Ethnic music and spirituals find occasional space here at the fellowship, but photos or artwork of people of color are not often represented. Although we say we're accepting and open to diversity, most UU places of worship reflect exactly who we are and then only continue to attract those who are like us. Reverend Morrison Reed pointed out that in America, Unitarian Universalists have a very different understanding of the word freedom. We point to it proudly and we state it in our principles, yet in reality, freedom for white UUs means the freedom to choose, and that means the luxury to choose our own path to faith. For people of color, freedom means freedom from bondage. I suspect from our brothers and sisters in the Philippines, this definition of freedom rings true for them as well. Between colonization of Spain and the United States, the Philippines has not been a free country for very long. Religiously, many still feel under the thumb of a powerful and sometimes oppressive faith and government. In the Philippines, Unitarian Universalism represents more of a liberation theology, a faith that has supported them in their efforts to gain human rights and fight the oppressive nature of their government and other powerful conservative religions. If we're to understand and embrace our brothers and sisters of color, we must embrace and understand the importance of holding up this distinction. How do we name freedom within our own congregation? This is something to think about. So what can we do? At that same retreat, Reverend Finley Campbell led a workshop exactly for our kind of congregation. He's an African-American UU preacher from Chicago who has a diverse congregation due to its location, but also due to its inclusive worship style. He offered a workshop called Multiracial Unity in White Congregations. And I believe he was talking to us here at Fox Valley. How can we, as mostly white folks, with intentionality and integrity, celebrate multiculturalism within a less than diverse community? He encouraged us to celebrate our unity with people of color by recognizing things we share and support as a whole. He suggested publicly celebrating as a congregation Juneteenth, which is actually happening this very afternoon at Houdini Plaza. Juneteenth is the oldest known celebration commemorating the end of slavery in the United States. By doing so, we show the community that we embrace these events and how they changed our world, and that we know this work is not yet over. We actually saw this play out when we had our own Philippine celebration last fall here at the Fellowship, and we found that Filipino folks from the community came to see what it was we were doing. When our larger community sees that our congregation celebrates and recognizes these connections, We'll draw their curiosity. They'll want to come in our doors and see who we really are. Truthfully, I think we've been on a good path. I'm proud to say that we've already established this congregation as one of the largest supporters of the annual crop walk. Our congregation's involvement in the support of the work of Esther and Towards Community are public demonstrations of our faith and how we want to live in this world. Jay and our choir have intentionally been including more ethnic music within our worship service, and I know all of you would agree it has greatly added to our worship experiences. I would love to see this congregation become one that the whole valley points to, as one that's welcoming, active, and living its faith out loud and publicly in a multitude of ways. I believe our new social justice groups have the potential to increase our visibility within the community and reach out to others who are seeking a liberal faith. As Dorothy Day asked in our reading, people wonder, what's the sense of each small effort? We must lay one brick at a time, take one step at a time. A pebble cast onto a pond causes ripples that spread in all directions. Each one of our thoughts, words, and deeds needs to be like this. Historically, Unitarian Universalists have been separated by classism, materialism, and race. We've been talking about and waiting for diversity for years, and yet we've often made it about trying to feel good about ourselves, not about changing anything for real. Reverend Morrison Reed challenges us not to focus on the shame and guilt of the past, but instead to work towards healing ourselves and becoming whole again. When we become whole, we naturally want to care for others because we see our connections to them. That's our seventh principle in action. My experiences in the Philippines opened my eyes to see that Unitarian Universalism is a faith for everyone. It resonates with the poor and its message about freedom from oppression and freedom of choice. Our connection to B'nai B'nai and to Deva opens up for us a greater wholeness for ourselves and for their congregations as well. We have a lot to learn from these congregations. And in B'nai B'nai, with their eighth principle, if God is love, is that something we can get behind here in Fox Valley? Many have asked again and again why we do not have love included in our principles. I believe our fellow UUs in the Philippines can show us how. As we stand side by side with our Filipino partners, it's obvious that we are a faith for all people of all backgrounds. They have a deep understanding and a profound desire, like us, to know truth and meaning, and they do not believe that there is one single way to find it. Our challenge here in Appleton is to make this message visible and audible to the entire community, not just a quiet conversation between ourselves within these walls, but one that we shout out loud in ways that celebrate our wholeness with one another, rich or poor, educated or not, all races, all sexual identities, and all faiths. We're called to live out our beliefs in a desire for wholeness for one another. Because if not us, then who will? May it be so.